Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. I am AB Dauji, and this is The Big Picture, broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam and Radio Al Ansar up to 12 o'clock, and thereafter only on Radio Al Ansar. That's The Big Picture. And of course, it's the weekend once again. And of course, the best part of this weekend is that Monday is a holiday. 24th September, a public holiday. Do you know why it's a public holiday? I beg your pardon? Heritage Day? No. Never heard of it. Let me tell you the actual reason why it's a holiday. The actual reason why it's a holiday. And the answer, Bayo Beno or Buzruko, 24th September is a public holiday because it's my birthday. So they made it a public holiday. That's it. And you know what? I am always amazed, really, really surprised, where the 41 years went, eh? Just like that, sure, gone. Or is it 38? I can't remember. So it's a lovely weekend, and every weekend starts, of course, with the big day, Friday, Jumu'ah. The highlight is the midday Salah. And then off to highlight number two, the big family get-together meal. That's right. Me, I just have a very light lunch. Dal and rice, and papad, and salad, and veg achar, and fried peppers, and fried brinjal, and aloo fry, and of course soji, and a glass or two of cool drink. That's all. Nothing much. After that heavy chow, I'm a total wreck. Finish. Kaput. It's as if I had half a bag of Zol. And what's my name after that belt loosening assault on the pet? Guess what's my name after that? My name is A.B. Drowsy. I'm totally shut in a very heavy dwal. I always wonder what will happen if a cop stopped me while I'm driving after that chow. One look at my zombie face and he will immediately reach for his breathalyzer. All of this brings me to the big news of this week. But let me tell you first about our wonderful constitution, which has often been described as the most advanced and enlightened in the whole world. The most advanced in the whole world. The constitution says that what you do within the confines of your home is a private matter in which the state cannot intervene. And just let's clarify that a little bit. You can do whatever you want inside your home as long as you are not harming anyone. For example, you can't throttle your mother-in-law and say that it's happening inside your home, so it's private and the state cannot interfere. And just to take it further, a pedophile cannot say that his dastardly acts are beyond the reach of the law. You get it? But what you do by yourself or with other consenting adults inside your home is your own business, into which the government, the state, the law cannot intervene or interfere. So, within that definition contained in the Constitution, you can smoke Zol inside your own home. And also, your backyard is your own private area. So you can grow your Zol there for your own needs. So, the judges of the Constitutional Court had no choice but to recognize the content and the directive of the Constitution. You see? Do you get it? Do you get it? Well, that is my interpretation of what the ruling is all about. The judges did their job, but out of what they ruled comes a whole lot of questions. You're smoking the Zol in your home. Well, that's within the law. But where did you get it from? Aha, aha. You must have bought it from somewhere. And the cops come and say, right, take us to that person. And that person who sold it to you will be arrested for dealing in Dacha. Dealing in Dacha is illegal. But wait, the court implied that if you grow Dacha for your personal use, then that is okay, not illegal. So how do you define this? How much do you grow for your personal use? How many Dacha plants is regarded as sufficient for personal use? Is it 10 or maybe 20? What if my backyard extends to 1 hectare? When the cops come, can I say, "Hi, Bo Constable, Lamini, what you mean I'm a Dacha merchant, eh? I'm not selling this thing. Me and my friends can finish this whole plantation in 1 weekend, no problem." And what will all those who live in flats, what will they do? No place to grow Zol, unless they have a big windowsill to keep some large flower pots. So it's quite difficult. You can smoke it inside your flat, but there's no way to buy it because anyone selling it will be guilty of a crime. It's a wonderful catch-22 situation. You know, I like the term catch-22. It's actually the title of a book. One of the funniest books I've read when I was still in school. Absolutely hilarious catch-22, written in 1961. It's a war novel. Can you believe it? A war novel can be hilarious. And I think it's set in World War II in Italy. The author is Joseph Heller. He actually coined that phrase in his book, Catch-22. That's actually the name of the book. The definition goes like this in the book. Pilots are flying one bombing mission, one campaign after another, non-stop almost, over and over again. So the camp's doctor says that, yes, a particular pilot by the name of Orr is crazy to fly. Crazy to fly these non-stop missions. Yes, he's crazy. So he is asked, somebody asks him, "So doc, why don't you ground him, meaning stop him from flying, put him on the ground. Why don't you ground him if you think he's crazy, meaning that he's crunk?" And the doc answers, "But Orr must ask me first that he wants to be grounded. That's the rule." So then the chap asks him again, "So doc, if Orr asks you to ground him, will you ground him?" And the doc answers, "No, then I can't ground him." And the person asks, "But why is that so? Is there a catch?" And the doc replied, "Yes, the rule is called catch-22. Anyone who wants to get out of combat duty isn't really crazy." Anyone who wants to get out of combat. Let me just read that part in the book where it sort of defines catch-22. There was only one catch, and that was catch-22, that specified that a concern for one's own safety in the face of dangers that were real and immediate was the process of a rational mind. Or was crazy and could be grounded. All he had to do was ask, and as soon as he did, he would no longer be crazy and would have to fly more missions. Or would be crazy to fly more missions and sane if he didn't. But if he was sane, he had to fly them. Yosarin, that's the chap who asked the doctor, was moved very deeply by the absolute simplicity of the clause of catch-22 and let out a respectful whistle. Right. So, there you have it. Did you get it, listeners? Catch-22. Now you've learned something, ne? See, I told you the big picture is an educational program, and you never believe me. So I think somehow this catch-22 rule applies here. You can smoke this Zol at home, but no one is allowed to sell it to you. So how are you going to get it, right? Nice one. Okay, but what about if you smoked it and went outside and drove your car? Then what? What happens then? Dacha, Zol, is regarded as a mind-altering substance, just like alcohol. But if you drink and drive, you could end up in tronk, jail, if the cops catch you. The breathalyzer measures whether you are over the legal limit and therefore fit or not fit to drive. What about if you are under the influence of dacha? What about that? Will cops be equipped with devices to measure this? And let me tell you this. Zol can intoxicate just as alcohol does. I don't know anything about alcohol, but I can tell you about Zol. Let me tell you a little story. I call it the unintended experience. If it could get me into trouble, then let me say immediately that it's all fiction, not true, fake news. I just made it all up, okay? Well, there you are. That is a... So there I was in a boys' club in Forsberg. In Johannesburg. That was way back in the early 70s. It was just a place where the guys met to play snooker and cards and so on. I just happened to be there. A lighty with long hair among the main O's. These O's were the main O's and the mamus, about 8 of them. Suddenly, they all went into the yard. Well, I didn't know what was happening, so I just followed them and went along. They stood along a wall, just sort of chatting casually. Still, I didn't know what was happening. Then when I turned, I saw that at the end of the line, one fellow lit up a pipe that is the broken top of a Coke bottle, and he took a long puff out of it. Long puff. And blew out a huge plume, a huge cloud of smoke. Then it was passed to the next one and the next, and each one took a long draw and blew big clouds of smoke. And then it came to me. Well, I didn't want to look like a muhu, a skapi as we call them. So I took it. And as I held it, it was extremely, almost red hot, but I didn't want to show that my hand was burning. Acting like a mamo, you see. I quickly took half a puff. My throat immediately and my lungs also caught on fire. I desperately wanted to cough, but that will make me look like a scappy. My eyes popped out. I battled to control myself to show that I'm also a mamu. It was a terrible, terrible experience, but worse was to follow. Half an hour later, I got into my car to drive from Forsberg to Actonville, Benoni, where I was living. It was absolute hell. The line in the road kept moving all over the place. The road started moving, and suddenly the road started melting. I gripped the steering wheel very tightly and drove at about 30 kilometers an hour on the highway. Lucky it was almost midnight and the road was clear. And lucky there were no cops around. I managed to make it home and crashed onto my bed, only to surface the next day at 10 o'clock. And the words of Nelson Mandela immediately came into my mind. Never, never again must I smoke that stupid thing. Good heavens, eh? That was the end of my encounter with a pipe. With this Zol thing. So you see, dear listeners, smoking Zol in the confines of your home may be protected by the Constitution. But what if you are seriously goofed, shut, and venture outside to drive? What about the fact that many criminals said that they first smoked Zol and then got the courage to carry out a criminal act? And let's not poo-poo the claim that dacha is a gateway drug, that it opens the gate to a person moving on to harder drugs. First Zol on its own, Then when it gets a bit boring, when you don't get that high after maybe 1 or 2 years, you add a little bit of mandrax to it and then move forward to something even harder. This is well documented. In fact, I heard a psychiatrist on radio saying exactly this just 2 days ago. And some people say, but we already got alcohol, which has the same effect as dacha. Same effect. So what's the big deal, eh? What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that alcohol is an evil. It has led to a great deal of misery, accidents, spousal abuse, right? Spousal abuse, violence in the home, in other words, etc. So I don't understand the logic. Why add another evil to an existing evil? Why add another evil to an existing? Can someone answer that? In fact, both should be eradicated, alcohol and dacha. And all this discussion about dacha brings me, coincidentally, to a story that I came across yesterday related to the topic. But before I get to it, let me touch on something that you already know. The suffering of people all over the world. Yemen, Kashmir, Afghanistan, Somalia, Sudan, Chad, Syria, Palestine. Man's inhumanity to man. Man's, the inhumane treatment of the Rohingyas, for example. It's sickening, sickening. But there are people who are also concerned about the terrible treatment of animals. The way rhinos are killed just to get their horns, or people protesting against the killing of whales and so on. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that. We should be very concerned. We should feel bad about that. But I am a little taken aback, by the concern about the killing of one particular sea life, which reminds me of a restaurant in Baghdad, along the Tigris River. You enter the restaurant, and near reception is a small pool about the size of 3 bathtubs. And in there are some very large fish swimming around. You point to a fish and a man hauls it out with a net. Half an hour later, as you finish your starters at your table, the fish is brought to your table, beautifully grilled with all of the veggies. And I had very mixed feelings about this. I mean, 30 minutes before, it was merrily swimming around, and then it was killed and brought for me to eat. I don't know. I suppose I'm just a bit of a softy. But I digress, dear listeners. The story I came across was about Zol and seafood, which I will tell you about after the break. Hey, welcome back. And the program is called The Big Picture. And before the break, I told you that I've got a very weird story about Zol and seafood. What a combination, eh? Well, I'm on a high, figuratively speaking, of course. For this story, we go to the good old US of A. Now, generally, when you order lobster, which is very similar to crayfish, maybe at a top-class restaurant, these lobsters are kept alive in a very large tank, and then they are freshly cooked by first throwing them into a big pot of boiling hot water. That's the usual method. But at one restaurant in Maine, in the U.S., known as Charlotte's Legendary Lobster Pound, the owner is not happy about killing the lobsters in this way, just dunking them in boiling hot water. The owner, Charlotte Jill, says, these are her words, "I feel bad that when lobsters come here, there is no exit strategy." She told this newspaper, Mount Desert Island. It's a unique place, and you get to do such unique things, but at the expense of this little creature. I've really been trying to figure out how to make it better. And so, she figured out how to make it better. She got a little pool outside her restaurant, where she keeps lobsters in a little water. The pool is covered, and then she pumps marijuana smoke into it. The lobsters get high and they become very relaxed and maybe even very numb. And when a customer orders, she then puts the goofed up lobsters into boiling water. So in this way, they are not so sensitive to being put to death. I suppose it's something like euthanasia. Jill believes that this is the most humane method of killing the lobsters. Get them shut and put them in boiling water. I wonder what the lobsters think about this, eh? And I wonder if you can get high if you eat the lobsters. More questions than answers. And it's also the same about Zol smoking being made legal in South Africa. The only way to figure all this out is to have a lekker long puff, right, Mamu? Well, I don't think so, eh? I don't think so. Forget that. One more thing I forgot to tell you. We have some very strict laws against cigarette smoking. And it is compulsory to have a warning on cigarette packs. Smoking can cause cancer. Yet, and I heard a doctor on radio say this, smoking dacha is even worse than cigarettes in possibly causing cancer. I wonder if that is why it's called marijuana. Like an old bully shouting, "Hey, fellas, stop smoking that stuff. Marijuana. Hey, marijuana." It's a Gujarati word meaning you're going to die. Marijuana. Let's quickly talk to somebody who is an expert on the subject. Let me get my headphones ready here. Expert on the subject. It's someone who raises such controversial issues in the media. I call him Saber Rattler, and he is, of course, Saber Jazbai. What was that about dynamite comes in small quantities? No. I got a better one. The smaller the green chili, the more fiery it is. Saber Jazbai, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to The Big Picture.
Wa alaikum salam. I can see you. I can see what you're smoking.
Right. So, how long have you been involved with Zol? Let me just rephrase that. subject of legalizing dacha, you've been on that topic for some time. So, just go ahead and please unpack for us this whole story about dacha being made legal now.
Well, dacha is not made legal. Let's get it very clear. It is not legal. Your consumption of dacha at home, in the privacy of your house, is been removed from the criminal sanction. It is still illegal to possess dacha in the public domain. It is still illegal to possess over 3 grams of dacha. It is still illegal to even grow dacha over and above 3 grams. So let's make it very clear, AB. I've been involved, incidentally, in legalizing medicinal marijuana since my sister-in-law passed away with colon cancer, the cannabinoid in marijuana has medicinal qualities about it. Ask any doctor worthy of his salt about it.
You said marijuana oil, eh? Just to be clear.
Cannabinoid, yeah. It's called cannabinoid.
Right. Proceed.
Now, there's an uproar. First of all, I'd like to talk about a judgment. It's very important. I think people want to know puffing smoke about the marijuana judgment. What the judgment says, very simple. It removes the criminal conduct of a person who consumes dacha at home, in his private domain. In other words, the law of privacy applies here. What a person does at home is his or her business, and therefore it is not for the police or the authorities to step in the picture. That is the essence of the judgment. It does not legalize, I repeat this, it does not legalize dacha under any circumstances. And if you're possessing dacha in the streets or in the workplace, etc., it can cost you your job and you can even get going to jail.
So how are you going to get this dacha?
Well, you grow it at home. It's allowed you to
I'm living in a flat.
Yeah.
And I want to smoke dacha.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to me?
Buy a potted plant.
Well, it's a bit of a catch-22 situation, isn't it? You can smoke it, but you can't buy it. Can't get it from anywhere.
Well, put it this way. That's the point. That's why I say you buying the dacha from a dealer is a criminal offense. So the law is not legalizing dacha. What it is doing is that it says whatever you do in your house, people drink at home, people smoke at home, people do funny things at home, and therefore It's called the law of exclusive domain. What you do inside your house is no person's business. That is what the judge said. He didn't say you can go smoke dhaka and have a party. No, he doesn't. You can grow dhaka in your yard.
But I'm just a little bit concerned or confused. Where are you going to get the dhaka? It's like saying you can cook meat in your house, but all butcheries are banned.
Very good question.
It's like crazy, you know. I don't understand it. You got a legal mind. So get me out of this confusion.
Very simple. And I repeat this. It has not legalized dhaka. So you can't buy it. You can't. But if you possess it at home, in case Santa Claus decides to bring it to you, then the cops can't arrest you if you have that. And remember, it is 3 grams of dhaka.
But they can arrest Santa Claus.
You can arrest Santa Claus. And you can... As you have home deliveries, you can get the guy to home deliver it to you.
Unless you extend your...
How do you police that law? This is important. So the court looked at the situation. The people are getting arrested for small quantity of dhaka. There are a lot of cancer sufferers out there, AB, who actually go out there, buy a little, we call it kaiti, and they smoke it simply because that is the only relief they get in smoking dhaka. And you have a catch-22 position as such. And the court stated that if a person possesses cannabis for his own use, not for sale, and that is up to 3 grams, he or she cannot be arrested.
Where do you get it from?
Well, they allow home delivery. Ask your local mamu. Deliver it to you. And
I don't know. It's very cold, very confusing. Everybody is celebrating. In Overport, I see across the road from me under the tree, the guys were celebrating when the news came out. So,
yeah,
the point... Yeah, that's a good one. Overport, eh?
Yeah,
okay, they have to get over the port. No more supplies.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, Amy, sorry, I got to reiterate this. It has not legalized. It has decriminalized the possession of dhaka at home. It is not, you will still get arrested in the streets and you will still go before a judge and you will explain to a judge that this is for my medicinal purpose and therefore I should be released.
I think the confusion will persist because that question can never be answered. Where are you going to get the zol to smoke in the privacy of your home? Where are you going to get it from?
You remember Shakespeare said, first thing you'll do, kill all lawyers. I think this is where we come in.
Well, there you are. Heard it from the man himself, the legal brain, Saber Jazbai, or Saber Rattler. Saber, jazakallah for your input. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. Keep well.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Right, listeners, now to the next story. You know, in the old days, way, way back, if your pants was torn, then you would not wear it again. Or if you could not afford buying new clothes, you would probably mend it. It was called invisible mending or something in those days. You stitch it up. Of course, no walking around with torn clothes. And so it's absolutely amazing to note that in recent years, people have been buying brand new jeans that were manufactured with deliberate tears in them, two or three on each leg. That is known now as high fashion. Can you believe it? And these torn jeans are so expensive. Sure, I should have kept all my old Levi's, we used to call them dungarees those days, that were worn out and torn from my teenage years and into the 20s. I could have taken them out now and shown off, worn them and shown off as a fashionista. You know what, I don't think it would have worked at all, because these days in those days I was, as they say, skral as a broomstick. I've got a pet now. You know, I've actually got a photograph of that when I was skral like a broomstick. I got a photograph of me walking down Grey Street in Durban wearing bell bottoms and having shoulder length hair like a first class poiri. But you know what? I should have never thrown out my old tackies. That's right. Tackies. My, well, they call them sneakers in America and Europe. Why? No, you won't believe it. Why shouldn't I have given away or thrown away my old tackies? Well, ladies and gentlemen, the new fashion statement is dirty, torn tackies patched up with some sort of bandage or over the top. Looks like very wide masking tape. I kid you not. I kid you not. Go and Google it on your phone right now. Go and Google it. Just put three words. Sneakers, fashion, and poverty. And I'll explain why poverty. Sneakers, fashion, and poverty. And click on that, and a photo will come up immediately. And, of course, the article about the tackies will pop up. And I just learned a new word. Distressed fashion. Distressed fashion. I think it means that your torn jeans and tackies, wearing them means that you are financially distressed, sort of acting like you are poor as some sort of a fashion statement, fashion style, to act like you are poor. Right? Distressed fashion, that's the new term. Good heavens, what next? What are you going to do next for fashion, eh? Maybe don't have a bath for 3 weeks and walk around smelling terrible to act like you are a homeless person? The tackie is sold under the brand name, this particular tackie that's being advertised, it's sold under the brand name Golden Goose. And the name of the tackie is Superstar Taped Sneaker. Superstar Taped Sneaker, I suppose, because this big ugly masking tape looking thing is over the top. It is sold by the company Nordstrom. This is how it is advertised. Company, hold it, Crumply, hold it all together tape details a distressed leather sneaker in a retro low profile with a signature sidewall star and a grungy rubber cup sole. What? Crumply hold it all together. Tape details a distressed leather sneaker in a retro low profile with a signature sidewall star and a grungy rubber cup sole. I don't know if you can make sense of that. It should actually be more accurately described as a dirty pair of torn sneakers with an ugly big patch over the top, fit for the dustbin. So, dear listeners, guess how much these tackies are selling for? Guess. Anyone? You at the back? No? Well, fasten your seatbelts. A pair of Superstar taped sneakers will cost you $530. And that translates to 7,500 rands. Man, you know what? I should have kept all my old torn jeans and tackies. Today at the flea market, I could have made a fortune, eh? I got a feeling that handkerchiefs are going to make a comeback into fashion. Remember the big square pieces of cloth, handkerchiefs, into which bullies with heavy flu kept blowing snot over and over again? Yes, they are going to make a, that's my prediction, they're going to make a comeback, perhaps with fake yellow and green stains to make them look like the genuine article. And maybe also time to shine suits and Chelsea boots and all. But with these 7,500 torn tackies coming out, people are upset. Most people are extremely outraged. The general comment is that you are mocking poverty. Here's what the article says. Many online commentators have accused the brand of fetishizing poverty, pointing out the cruel irony in people being able to afford such expensive sneakers while so many others are forced to wear their own until they fall apart without being able to think of it as a fashion statement. And at the end of the article is this line: according to the U.S. Census Bureau, that's a population count, of 2016, it estimates that 43.1 million Americans live in poverty that year. There you are, folks. maybe very soon you will see these tackies in our malls here. But wait, 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 wait. Maybe there's a positive side to all of this, eh? Rich, spoiled lighties will buy them for 7,500, but poor boys will now not feel out of place or shy to wear the torn jeans and old, worn-out tackies. So everyone will look the same, rich and poor. Wow, eh? There's something to think about. And so, dear listeners, people are mindful of...